Gather from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 6. And we're going to be thinking about, in our series Becoming Human, Giving Glory, about anxiety and wealth. So Jesus is speaking. No one can be a slave of two masters. He will hate one and love the other. He will be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. This is why I tell you not to be worried about the food and drink you need in order to stay alive, or about clothes for your body. After all, isn't life worth more than food? And isn't the body worth more than clothes? Look at the birds. They do not sow seeds, gather a harvest, and put it in barns. Yet your Father in heaven takes care of them. Aren't you worth much more than birds? Can any of you live a bit longer by worrying about it? And why worry about clothes? Look how the wild flowers grow. They do not work or make clothes for themselves. But I tell you that not even King Solomon, with all his wealth, had clothes as beautiful as one of these flowers. It is God who clothes the wild grass, grass that is here today and gone tomorrow, burnt up in the oven. Won't he be all the more sure to clothe you? How little faith you have. So do not start worrying, where will my food come from, or my drink, or my clothes? These are the things the pagans are always concerned about. Your Father in heaven knows that you need all these things. Instead, be concerned above everything else with the kingdom of God and with what he requires of you, and he will provide you with all these other things. So do not worry about tomorrow. It will have enough worries of its own. There is no need to add to the troubles each day brings. As you know, our theme for the year is Becoming Human, Giving Glory. And we're going to soon be moving into that wonderful season of Advent. And so there's beginning to be a progression to the whole idea of becoming fully human like Jesus was, and bringing glory to God in everything that we do. And we have turned recently back to Jesus's talking to the disciples. I'm going to turn my mic on, sorry. Jesus talking to the disciples about supreme blessedness, hence what we talk about the Beatitudes. And we get that situation of Jesus climbing the mountain, separating himself from the crowds, and giving his full attention to his disciples who gather around him, as we do today, around God's word. And he speaks to them about what it really means to follow him. And within that is the expectation that we need to grow. We need to follow Jesus more closely. We have a lot to learn. He is drawing us deeper into himself. And he's concerned, Jesus, about the way we live our lives, not just on our own, but in community and in the world. And we've been thinking just very powerfully about our brothers and sisters in India and what that means for them. And we began this service with the call, the focus of Jesus saying that our eye is to be focused, the eye of our heart. As human beings, we'd have a clear focus upon the light, upon God, so that our whole being is enlightened, and so that we are transformed, and so we take into the darkness that whole message, that relationship that we have with God. We need a clear focus. And particularly when the darkness seems to be crowding in upon us, we need that very clear focus. And we need to be able, humbly to some extent, to give others some focus and direction. Jesus, as he talks about the eye, is talking about light within the body. It's a call to a different vision, a call to a different focus than the strictly religious or the strictly materialistic. You're not to be like these people who are highly religious but who are hypocrites, and you are not to be like those who are strictly materialistic. All they're worried about is material things, the pagans, the people of the nations, the people that don't refer to God. So in this passage, these 10 or so verses, from verses 24 to 34 in Matthew 6, we see Jesus talking to us again about not having double vision. You cannot serve God and money, or God and mammon. You need to focus on God and God's kingdom, says Jesus. No one can be a slave of two masters. There's no way that can happen. You can only have one master. If you have two masters, if you have sort of a double vision, you will hate one and love the other one. You'll always be resentful. You will hold on to one and despise the other. And he's talking about having one master who we focus on and we hold on to. You cannot serve both God and money. And that saying has come into even our materialistic world. People still use that term, but perhaps not as much as they did. And Jesus uses these hyperbole, these extremes, to make his point strongly. You cannot serve God and money. And the word that's used, mammon, is an Aramaic word, and it just means wealth or money. Jesus, though, is very realistic in this section, acknowledging very real human anxieties, and that we have a concern for our security, especially as we look into the future. And I think as human beings, we need to be honest that we have many anxieties. We have concerns for our security and for the future. They may not seem as extreme as in some other places, but we have those. And if we lie to the world and say that we don't have those anxieties, I think people will just think either we're very shallow people or we're not very truthful people. The question is, what do we do with those anxieties? And some of you will have very real anxieties about different sorts of things. We all have those. The question is, what do we do with them? They are the mark of being human. They are present within our lives, and Jesus knew that. And so he said to them earlier on, happy are those whose greatest desire is to do what God requires. God will satisfy them fully. So the needs that they have will be satisfied, whether they're physical or spiritual, emotional. Those can be satisfied in God, those who seek to go deeper with God. I think that we've established the fact, hopefully through the weeks, that Jesus calls us as his followers to live prophetically, to be different in a positive way, not a negative way, a positive way that challenges people to think about their perspectives and their values. And Jesus describes us living prophetically in relationship with other people, both in the workplace, in the community, in our families. He calls us to live prophetically. Do not be like them. It couldn't be clearer than that statement in verse 8. Be different from pagans, those people who do not regard God as important. It's amazing in a situation like India, isn't it? Probably the most religious of continents, and yet we don't know how deep that spirituality actually is there. To be as India is quite a complicated situation. What would it mean, I asked you last week, for you to be different? I sent you away with a challenge. In what way is God calling you to be different? So some of you may have thought about that. Today, I particularly want us to think about our relationship to wealth, to money. This is the last slide. It will summarize what we're going to be thinking about in the main part of our talk. In verse 21, just before we started that challenge to have focus, Matthew's gospel, Jesus says, for your heart, the center of your being, your will, your heart will always be where your riches are. And the term eye and heart are used almost synonymously. What do we really value and seek after in our lives? That's a very key question. What are our ambitions for? What are we ambitious about? You might think your ambitions are very shallow, just for the basic things of life, but they may be far higher. What are our ambitions for our children? What do we really value? Where is our treasure? Just a few things to highlight very quickly. Jesus has already talked about money, and he's already established that we need to share our money with those who are in need, and to do this discreetly, not as a performance. Verse 2 of chapter 6. He has also taught in the Lord's Prayer that we are to release others from debt. So those that owe us money, if it gets to the point where we know they cannot repay it or it's becoming a stumbling block, we are to release that debt and let it go, because God has released us from our debts to him. We know that a degree of loving and giving cheerfully, generously is called for. My goods, my wealth, is not just for me and my family. I am not to possess things as such. My goods, my wealth, is not just for me. And Jesus has argued that we need a forward vision. Don't just bank everything. Don't just store it up here. Have a vision of a future where you're banking rewards and riches which relate to character and relationship. So these principles are very central to the Christian understanding of the gospel. We are to value spiritual wealth, not just material wealth, but we're to be totally realistic about wealth and the part that it plays in our society. These are core understandings to what we say we believe. But here Jesus focuses in and addresses particularly human anxiety, which can fill our thinking, the whole of our thinking space. It can make us want to accumulate money and possessions. Even anxiety can mean we want to be free of worry. We can be very anxious, and it can be a key part of every day and of our lives. It's one of the reasons I think we should stop at least once a day to thank God for the food that is in front of us, as a recognition that God has provided for us, and a remembrance that I suppose that there are many people that do not have as much as that, but it's in a recognition of where that provision comes from. Anxieties will always threaten our security and our peace with God. And anxiety can push God down, can demote God in our thinking, so that the whole of our thinking is focused on what those anxieties are. Jesus talks about very material things here, but there can be other things that are anxieties, not just food and water and clothing and shelter. The key to reducing our anxiety, which I guess most of us would want to do, is our relationship with God. Because our relationship with God will also affect our relationship with material things and our need for material things. We know, we're told, that if we seek God's kingdom, everything else we need and value will stay in its rightful place. That is not a promise of material prosperity and wealth, as some would suggest. And we need to hold together verses 31 and 33, a verse which speaks about anxiety and also a verse which speaks about seeking God's kingdom and doing what is right. We want to be in good balance, I believe, as human beings, to be in that position of shalom, that we're aware of God's goodness and we can talk to others and they can see, let your light shine, let your light shine, let your light shine, that for us, wealth may hold a different position than for them. Decisions we make about our future need to relate to our ambitions for God, not just our anxieties and concerns. But Jesus is talking realistically, isn't he, about human struggle. And we want to admit as human beings that their human struggle is real, and that Jesus comes into a situation of human struggle and he comes to help us in that struggle. And here he speaks to these disciples and he says to them, you cannot have two masters. You cannot have two lords. You must choose God or mammon, God or money. What's going to be your first priority? If you don't make that choice, then you will literally be torn apart again and again. And in fact, it will add to your anxiety. I don't think it's a choice we make once. I think at various stages in our lives, God challenges us as to whether material things, material wealth, has again taken priority. My own experience is it's a decision you make many, many times over, where you may make readjustments and reassessments about things. Or else we should at least do that when we're talking with Jesus about how we view material things. We can't say, I've got it right, I'm always going to get it right. We will need to choose what we hold on to, and the word that's used in the Greek is anthizete. We hold on to certain things, we value them, we treasure them, but we can only hold on to one thing. That's what he's saying, you can only hold on to one thing. Are you going to hold on to God, following God through me, or are you going to value and hold on to wealth? 35 years ago, I preached a sermon, a talk, and it stayed with me. Not many people probably remember things I preached 35 years ago, but you do. I preached a sermon in Queen's Road Church, Wimbledon. It was the sermon I had to preach to see if they would recommend me to go to the Ministerial Recognition Committee. In those days, they wouldn't let me preach as a woman on a Sunday. I had to preach on a Wednesday. So obviously, God's different on a Wednesday. We won't go into that. So I preached this talk, and I preached about possessions. I may have even spoken from this passage, I cannot remember. But I had one key line, our possessions will possess us. Which is, if we let our possessions hold on to us, then that will become our driving force. Our possessions will possess us. And Jesus teaches us something very different about being open-handed and a different view to wealth. So there you go, it's still there within me. Maybe nobody else in the room ever remembered it again, but there you go. God knows what we need. This is what Jesus said. He knows that we are body, we are corporeal beings with basic requirements that God knows all about. The very basics, we would say, not the luxuries, the necessities of food, water, clothing, and shelter. We would say, you know, that for human continuation of life, those are really the basic things, I think, and we would long for everybody to have access to those things in sufficient abundance to maintain even the body. We would then speak, I'm sure, about other things as well. It's common sense that we should recognize, says Jesus, that worry and anxiety will not increase how long we live or how tall we grow. It's just appealing to common sense. We know that, but it doesn't necessarily stop us worrying, even though we know that. When I came to East London, I got used to the expression, so I was an Essex girl, so I got used to them saying to me, you die if you worry, you die if you don't, so don't worry. And there's a lot of truth in that, but of course most of us, if we're sensitive, reflective sort of people, do often worry. And we know, maybe we've had quoted as, oh, fear and faith don't go together, you know, you shouldn't be anxious. Well, great, that's heaped more guilt upon me. But here is Jesus actually talking about what to do with our anxiety, what we do with our anxiety. He says in verse 30, this is Jesus being honest, human faith or trust in God tends to be small. We know that. We want to grow from small to bigger. We want to grow. And fear and anxiety can be a means of us growing into greater faith. Even doubt can be a means for us growing into greater faith. We learn through life to trust God. We don't just trust God because somebody in a pulpit tells us to trust God. It's because day by day we begin to discover that actually that is true. If you agree, say yes. I think it's true. That's my experience. Through life, we can learn to trust that God will not fail us. Then we may face a bigger challenge. It may be a life-threatening or a life-shortening illness. It may be a redundancy. It may be seeing somebody who we respected in the faith begin to slide backwards and become lukewarm. But we can learn to trust God. He says the pagans, those who do not respect God in all the nations, always worry obsessively about provision for basic needs. We get so tied up into our concern for those basic needs, but our Father in heaven knows that we need them. With Brexit looming upon us, whatever it means, there is a temptation to hoard. Have you started bulk buying? Really is very little point. Yeah, you might be sensible and start getting an allotment, but I mean, But it shows human nature. We want to feel secure. There's got to be enough in the barns. You know, we've got to have those items and so on. Now, I actually am concerned. I am concerned about things like medicines, pharmaceuticals and other things getting. I'm concerned, and we must pray for our government. But the temptation is always to be anxious. So Jesus offers an alternative, and it's more than a distraction therapy. If you've been in counselling for your anxiety, you'll know that often a simple behavioural technique that's taught is distraction therapy. We'll think about something else. And sometimes you just have to do that. His alternative, if you are concerned, if you are focused on God's kingdom and bringing glory to God and doing what is right, then that is going to free you from many of the anxieties people experience, because in that relationship with God, you will be proving again and again and again that God knows what he is doing. Secondly, but linked to this, he says you should focus not so much on the future as living in the present, in today, in the now. In another place it said, sufficient unto today are the evils thereof. But in other words, you live in the now. And it doesn't mean you don't make plans, you don't think intelligently, but your focus should be living in the now and to the full. And that is the way to do it. Don't you think Jesus had to do that? He lived his whole life in the shadow of the cross. He had to focus. And as somebody said to me in the week, you know, it's amazing, even when his face was set to Jerusalem, he had time to have a meal with his friends. He had time to talk to his father. He had time to listen to people. He lived his life. Don't tell me that wasn't anxiety in the shadow of the cross. And yet he put his time into those quality relationships, being open to the Father, speaking on the words the Father had to him. What do you do with your anxiety? I'm trying a new technique, which my spiritual director recommended to me, and I thought she was bonkers. Because we do all sorts of things with anxiety, don't we? We quote scripture at it. The Lord has not given me a spirit of fear, but of peace and of love and of sound mind. We renounce it. We speak against it. We try and think about something else. She said something to me that I wasn't quiet first of all, but after about three attempts to say something, she just said, think about it. She said, why don't you sit with your anxiety? Now, those of you that aren't in spiritual direction won't know what that term means, but essentially, all it means is don't rush away from it. Don't try and ignore it or deny it. Just sit down and essentially say, okay, what do I feel? Lord, show me what I'm anxious about, what I'm fearful about. So she said, I want you to go in and try that. So I thought, oh, yeah, okay. Anyway, it's a most interesting idea, because the strangest experience I had was that it set boundaries. As I considered what I was anxious about, I realized it wasn't big and endless. It was containable, it had boundaries, and it was quite manageable just to sit with it. And in fact, feel all the anxiety that you feel about it, you try it, and then actually, it just seems to melt away. And then, of course, we can talk about it informally with God. We can colloquy, why was I anxious about that? We can take it further. But it is quite an interesting view to sit with it and see, actually, relatively, not even trying to analyze it, just to wait with it. I'd be interested to know what effect that has for you. Maybe come and share. Human ambition. Now, does this change with aging? Well, it may do. Where we fix our eyes and our hearts affects the whole of our lives. So we see our youngsters growing up through teenage and 20s and 30s, and we wonder what their ambitions are. We can remember ourselves at that age, and we sort of draw comparisons. Where we fix our eyes and our hearts affects our whole lives. But as we get older, do our ambitions change? Are other things more important? What do we really value? That's a big question, and you can't speed up that process for some people, but it is interesting whether we really value God more. And it may not just be related to age, but with the aging process, it does change. So am I, are you fixed in my relationship with God, or am I fixed in my relationship with money and wealth? What really is the most important? What are we putting all our energies into? Some people may try to serve God on Sundays and mammon on Monday to Friday. I don't know what they do with Saturday, probably sleep. But nobody can be a slave, a doulos, or the property of two owners. I think this is really important to those of you guys that are in financial services. It is so important that in those financial services, whatever form they are, that our priority is actually God. We know the importance of money, but we also know the dangers of money. It's quite a key issue. So we should particularly pray for brothers and sisters who are involved with financial services, I mean, clearing banks and insurance and so on, you know, that we are able to see godly values enacted through those services, or whether we may find some of the services, and they may not just be financial services, they are actually encouraging people in certain things that are not particularly helpful long-term, hence payday loans and other things like this. You know, we've had to remove, from our services because we recognize they're destructive of human life and community and so on. So we can't serve God on Sundays and mammon Monday to Friday. We need to see whether God is in the forefront. To have anything other than God in the forefront is idolatry. We are all guilty at various stages of loving other things before God. What is our eye focused on? And increasingly, as we get closer to God, as we follow God more closely, what do we value in our relationship with God? Do we value that more than earthly possessions? We are clearly told by Jesus to have confidence that God knows what we need and God will provide. Working that through is not necessarily easy. So Jesus says in verse 25, with the recognition that you can't serve both God and money, this is why I tell you not to be worried. I just love it that Jesus got time to talk to these people about worry. And he's almost saying to them, you are going to experience this. And when I'm not with you, it's going to be even more difficult. Will you follow God or will you go back to what I've taken you out of? And that was the temptation, wasn't it? To go back to that old way of living. Now, even rich people, not just poorer people, can be obsessed, preoccupied with food, drink, clothing, houses, cars. You say, really? Yes. I'm talking about the broad sweep of our material world, which is concerned with consumption. Please, we cannot buy into this without putting God first. You just need to look at magazine programs, at house refurbishments, escape to the country. These people are not just seeking a better quality of life, of course they are, but to be regarded as successful and prestigious. We used to call it keeping up with the Joneses, but that shows my age. Yes, people do want a quality of life, and they are rejecting certain forms of consumerism. Good, that is excellent. People are saying some other things I value. But what do we think will actually enable us to be regarded as successful and prestigious? Are we really worried about that? Now, if we were in emergency famine conditions, which so many, many people are, then we will need to be concerned about food, drink, clothing, and shelter. That will be our first priority. We'll be saying to God, I need to get water, clean water. But in the conditions in which we live, we have more than enough. That whatever our situation, Jesus says that human life is more important than food, drink, and clothing. It is important. This isn't a new issue. I want to tell you a story before I close, which has always impressed me, about Francis of Assisi. And some of you will know this story. Now, some people, when they picture Francis, see him, you know, looking at the birds, looking at the flowers, which are wonderful, wonderful pictures. And the brother Sun, sister Moon, and with Claire, his counterpart, his female counterpart, you know, concerned about that. But this is a man who'd made radical sacrifices to follow God, who had to choose between God and money. So he was born in Assisi, a very, very beautiful place, about 1181. I know it well. I was locked in a toilet with a man with a machete because I didn't take any money in. So I always remember Assisi, but it is a beautiful place. His parents were Pietro and Pica Bernardone. And he was born into, I'll tell you later, born into a world of wealth and opulence. And his money came from what? Do you know, Michelle? You should know this one. No. His money came from the fact that his father was a cloth merchant. He supplied cloth to the medieval version of sort of Ralph Lauren. Wonderful fabrics. Fabrics probably better than we could even make today. And of course he made his money out of largely by exploiting poor workers in the clothing industry. You've heard it all before. But his father made magnificent wealth. And Francis was looking forward to a life of total opulence and wealth. Very religious culture. As always, religion often goes with wealth. And Francis is sent to war at the age of 20. And he becomes a prisoner of war for a year. And it changes his whole view. He was released and he became seriously ill. It's a very similar story to Ignatius of Loyola. And this began a major turnaround in his life. Many people who have been soldiers and warriors and then move towards a view of non-violence when they see the future of war. He saw lepers who he had despised before and began to love them. And his conversion to Jesus, the Jesus way, took some time. It involved numerous moments and movements, key things where he had to decide, will I serve God and the way of justice and kindness, or will I follow the way of wealth? And the culmination, I don't think it was culmination, but they say that, but the key point in his conversion was what happened with his father. And it often happens in that way. When you have a father that you admire and you respect and you want to be like, you have to make a decision who is going to be your provider and who are you going to model yourself on, your earthly father or a greater father than that. And his father questioned his generosity and his servitude, he saw it as to the poor, and challenged him, really, you know, are you prepared to go all the way? Why are you doing this, etc., and so on. And they were standing there with the Bishop of Assisi, and the story happens, and you know what happens, you know what Francis did. He, who had made all his wealth through beautiful, wonderful clothing, and so he strips naked. The text says, even his drawers. So he takes everything off, and the bishop, in true bishop style, of course, covers him up. But he strips naked, and he walks away from his father and his wealth. And he walks in the way of Jesus. So I don't know if God's going to ask you to do that. Give us warning if he does. And Francis understood that his conversion to Jesus required him to change his relationship to everything, not just his father. And following Jesus will require us to change our relationship to our own earthly fathers and family, but even his clothes. Even his clothes. And there's a particular campaign that you can look up, and I put the link in there, which is looking for garment justice, which is looking for workers in the clothing industry, for those that are arguing that that's so important worldwide. This has got a very important implication. Even your attitude to your clothing should change, because our attitude to clothing, for instance, is causing sweatshops and God knows what in other places of the world. Sometimes, of course, it's providing a living for other people in the world. So it's not an easy situation. But what are we concerned about? Will we follow God or money? So Jesus is speaking against anxious thoughts. He's not speaking against thinking and not against forward planning. He's already taught, though, in the parable of the sower, that anxiety and worry will stifle the word that God gives us. And for some of us, it is our anxieties and our worries that stifle God's words that he has actually spoken to us. Obsessional worry, even about domestic responsibilities, can stop us from living life to the full, as we know from the story of Martha and Mary. God cares about our body rather than our clothes. And Jesus calls us to meditate upon the example of God's care of the planet, the birds, the plants, the insects. And as we meditate upon the planet, we become anxious. Because in our anxiety and greedy consumption, we've been able to put at threat even the future of human existence. That is what we come up with now. We've cared so much about what we consume that we've even put the future of the planet at risk. So recent findings cause us to consider God's priorities. Will you follow God or will you follow money? How will you live your lives? How will you consume? Because if you carry on as you are... So, Jesus Christ, who lived in the shadow of the cross, here advocates that we seek God's priorities, God's kingdom, and being free from anxiety. So then, God's children, says John Stott, you are promised freedom neither from work, nor responsibility, nor from trouble, but only from worry. The world's peoples generally are ambitious to possess things and to have power. It should not be so amongst us, God's people, those who say we follow Jesus. This is the challenge that comes to us. I could say more. I will perhaps continue next week. Anxiety and wealth. What are we seeking after? We're going to